I'm Dick Gordon. Coming up, the story of a woman who had her ID stolen and refused to let the thief walk away with it. It all started when the mailman lost the master key, and Karen Lodrick's mail was stolen. Karen watched her accounts drained and saw bills run up in her name. But after a while, she also saw an ATM photo of the culprit. So when Karen spotted that very woman in a line at a Starbucks, she called the cops. When the cops didn't show, Karen started tracking the woman on her own. Through the streets of San Francisco, she followed her. Twice she confronted her. The chase took on a certain desperation when the thief disappeared, but Karen persisted. What's more, she was on her cell phone with a 911 operator throughout the chase, so the entire escapade has been recorded for posterity. One more story about just how the Wild West was won. I'll talk with Karen about her modern-day citizen's arrest right after the news. Talk to anyone who's had their identity stolen, and they'll tell you it's one of the worst things to have happen. Not only are you likely to lose control of your name and your ID numbers and your credit rating, but you are left feeling completely helpless. There's so little the authorities can do to track down or stop the abuse of stolen ID, particularly when it's getting so much easier to swipe a card or bank online. What's worse, most people who get skinned by an ID thief never get that money back, and they wind up paying out their own cash for the insult of having been robbed. So what would you do if you had your ID stolen and then suddenly you spotted the thief? I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story.
The Story is produced by North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. It's co-produced and distributed by American Public Media.
This is one of those stories where the audio tapes from 911 are our reminder of the actual drama. Karen Lodrick had her ID stolen and months later, just by chance, spotted the thief.
Please get here, please. She just went on call. I can't believe it. Oh!
20 seconds.
She's on golf now going towards the market.
Can we get an ETA? Is there any chance?
She might have went in this building here. Oh my God, it's her. I can't believe it. I knew it.
But this is so much more than one of those afternoon cops and robbers moments. This is also a story about identity theft, and it comes with all the frustration and all the waiting and the financial pain and all the time that ends up having to be spent trying to sort out financial affairs after someone has stolen your ID. It happened to Karen Lodrick. Every moment of that ordeal is burned in her mind.
I got a phone call, like an automated phone call from the bank. It said, if these are your large withdrawals, you know, just regard this phone call. But if not, then press number 2 or dial this number, something like that. And so, of course, I realized that I hadn't made any withdrawals that day. And I was like, huh, that's odd. And so I made the phone call and a guy got on the phone and he's like, is this your withdrawal? And is this your withdrawal? And did you make a withdrawal on this day and this day? And I'm like, well, no.
How much money were we talking about at this point, Karen?
3 days he was talking about, and it was $600 each day. So that, what is that, $1,800?
Well, and that's about the max that you can get out of an ATM as well, I think.
Yes, yeah. It is.
Had you lost a wallet, or had there been a break-in at your apartment? Anything that made you think, oh my gosh, you know, somebody's got all my stuff?
There had not been anything that I knew of at the time. And he goes, well, isn't this your debit card number? And he read that. And I said, well, let me look. And I looked. I said, well, no, that's not even my card number. And then I like really panicked. I was like, whoa, that's weird.
Yeah.
And no, I didn't know of anything going on in the apartment complex, anything weird. And, you know, it's funny because Wells Fargo, they just did not really help me at all.
Wells Fargo was the bank we're talking about here, right?
Yes.
And you couldn't just shut down your accounts at that point and say, somebody unauthorized is getting at my accounts, freeze everything until we can sort it out?
Yeah, no, they did not even recommend that. The only thing, he's like, well, I'll close this card. So I said, yes, please close that card. I don't know that card. You know, and then he gave me a number to call. He said, call the fraud department. So I called this fraud department and I put in the claim. And, you know, nobody instructed me. No one said, well, you need to close that account. That's a compromised account. I mean, I just like, it just didn't even like dawn on me what was really happening yet.
Yeah.
And I, And my parents were the ones that had to tell me, because I called them up and I said, well, you know, this thing happened and isn't that weird? And they said, oh, because my dad had dealt with identity theft. He had had $4,000 stolen years previously. And he's like, oh, go down there, close that account. I'm like, oh, okay. So I did. And I still didn't even really realize what was going on. It wasn't until I got down there and I said, well, I need to close my account and I need to get a new account. I'm not sure what's happening. But so they looked at the account and then they'd moved the screen over so I could see. And everything was gone. All my money was gone. I mean, there were, you know, just a list of transactions that were both credit and debit withdrawals. And it was close to $9,000. And there was my checking. And it was starting to go into my savings, because you know how it kind of, they're connected and they roll over.
Yeah. I'm imagining what I would feel like if I'd been looking at that computer screen for my own account. Your stomach must have been just dropping out of your body at this point.
Oh, yeah. I was sick to my stomach, and I was, probably tears were in my eyes. I mean, I just couldn't believe it. I mean, it was a sick feeling for sure, because you just don't know. What does this mean? Is this money actually gone? What happens? What do I do now? What's next? You know, I have bills to pay. I have rent. What do I do?
And at this point, if I'm not mistaken, Karen, you still didn't know who had what piece of paper that was giving them access to your money, right?
Right. But what I did see was that there were two credit cards that were not mine. I said, well, this is two different cards here. I'm like, that's not my card. That's not my card. So we went down the list. I said, that's not me. That's not me. That's because I only have one credit card. And so it was easy to kind of see what was mine and what wasn't.
When you're saying, that's not my card, that's not my card, does it mean that you weren't going to be liable for those charges? Were they saying, oh, okay, don't worry about it, we'll cover that, we'll cover that?
No, I still thought I would be responsible. I mean, I was, you know, I was pleading with them in a way that said, you know what, but this isn't my card. Why is my money gone? This isn't my card. They closed the account, they gave me a new account, and told me to, you know, to put in a claim, another claim. So I, you know, had to do that on the phone, lots of phone calls, lots of hours on the phone. And I mean, I just kind of was dealing with that the first couple of days because it was kind of this dual account where there were credit and also debit. Nobody really knew where to put me. And, you know, and I was talking to several people. I was like, you know, I've got to talk to one person and handle this. You know, this is ridiculous. So I finally did get over to one person. She says, well, probably it looks like your mail was stolen, because these were cards that were sent through the mail.
You're saying that Wells Fargo, your bank, sent you credit cards in the mail? Were these cards that you had ordered?
No, they were not. I didn't know anything about them. So what I did was I started asking the neighbors, and I found out from one of the neighbors that, in fact, he had seen the mailboxes. You know how the postman can open up like all the mailboxes at once?
Yeah, it's a master key. I've seen
this. The master key.
Yeah.
He said that he saw that actually the boxes were all open, and he tried to close it, and he had to really, you know, shove it to get it to close. I was like, well, that's really weird. And so I said, well, I've had my mail stolen, from what the bank told me. And so then I called the post office and finally got to talk to someone who said, oh, yeah, those keys had been stolen. The federal keys off of the postman had been stolen in our neighborhood.
But what did you find out about what had been taken from your mailbox? Exactly what had the thieves or thief got their hands on?
Well, the only thing that I knew of was those two debit cards, because those were and a bank statement.
Debit cards and a bank statement that had been mailed to you from with the Wells Fargo Bank, right?
Right.
But the PIN numbers, aren't they supposed to come in some other envelope or over the phone? And doesn't the phone have to be your phone when you call in to verify it? I mean, I thought there were all these safeguards in place.
I thought so, too. They said that because I thought originally the PIN numbers were in the same envelope, but they said, no, they're not in the same envelope. They will come separately. He's like, but unfortunately, you know, they get sent, they could be sent around the same time, and they could get delivered at the same time, even though they do, in fact, come in separate envelopes. And that is what happened. I mean, they did, obviously, they came at the same time. So then I questioned the unauthorized phone. Why, if they're calling from a phone that isn't my phone, why did you guys open these up? And their reasoning was, well, she had your bank statement number. She had your account number. So?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Karen, tell me then, if I understand this correctly, this was just the beginning of the story, that there were unauthorized accounts that were opened in your name and old credit cards that were brought back to life and loans applied for and PayPal accounts. I mean,
yes.
This went on now for what? For months?
Months.
Now, there were police brought into it and fraud alerts put on the account. But at some point, someone gave you a photograph that helped you untangle this. Tell me about that.
They said, well, there's going to be ATM photos. And I said, great. And they said, would you be willing to view these photos? I said, absolutely. And they said, well, pick a branch. They would email them over. And I gave them the local branch. And they did. And I went down there and I looked at them. And they said, well, do you know her? And I said, no. And
Was it the same person in the photos?
It was just one woman, and there were about six photos, and five of them she had sunglasses on,
yeah,
and this fuzzy coat, and then
coat was going to become important later on, right?
It was, yes, and I knew it right away. I said, oh, that's a very distinctive coat. You don't see that coat very often, though I had seen it before.
Yeah. Did they give you a copy of the photograph, Karen, that you could carry with you?
You know, they did. I asked. I said, can you give me a copy of this, and can you email it to me? Because my feeling was, if she's, you know, looting the neighborhood, let's post this in the neighborhood and let the neighborhood know and let's get the watchdog out. But they never sent me. They said they would, but they never sent it through email. But they did give me a copy. And I kept that with me, and I would show it to the local merchants and stuff and just try to do what I could to keep people aware and keep myself aware.
You carried that photo with you, did you?
I did. I did. I kept it with me, and I would, I just knew that coat was going to be something significant.
As fate would have it, that coat cracked the case. Or almost. Karen Lodrick, like most people who've had their ID stolen, had started to think there'd never be an end to it. But then she got a break. She spotted the coat on the arm of the thief herself. And that's when Karen became her own one-woman posse. And the story took on a whole new urgency. And that's where we'll pick it up in just a moment. I'm Dick Gordon from American Public Media. This is The Story. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story. The theft of Karen Lodrick's ID is a story that should put a chill through all of us. Her own bank sent her unsolicited debit cards and PIN numbers through the mail. That made it just too easy for the thief. And so over a number of months, Karen took time off work to try and patch up her affairs, while all the time the thief continued to use Karen's stolen ID. One day, this past April, Karen Lodrick was making one more trip to the bank to pick up a document, except she was early. The bank was closed.
I decided to go over to the Starbucks and get a coffee, and while I was waiting for my latte, this woman standing next to me had that coat over her arm. And I was like, well, that's interesting. There's that coat. Wow.
And it was so distinctive, that coat, that you knew it right away. Did you, Karen?
I did.
Yeah.
I did. And then I noticed it was very dirty. Like she wasn't keeping it clean. And then I looked at her and, you know, she kind of had bad teeth. But she had these bright, great, you know, Gucci glasses on. And I went, well, you know, those could be similar to the glasses I saw in that ATM photo. And then she's, you know, carrying this nice bag. But she just didn't look right. And she didn't feel right either. I mean, my instincts were like, this is not right. this could be her.
I wouldn't know what to do. What did you do?
I didn't know what to do. So I just kept looking at her. It's the writer artist in me that's, you know, inquisitive, you know. And then she was with a gentleman and they went and sat at a table and I thought, I'm going to sit by right next to him. There's a table empty right next to him. I sat right next to him, trying to kind of listen to the conversation, see if I could hear him saying anything. But, you know, my stomach was just coming out of my skin. I was just like, you've got to do something. This is something. And so I called 411 to get information, to get the police. I didn't feel like it was a 911 yet.
Yeah.
I just wanted to call the police and say, you know, get someone here just to identify or see what's going on. And so I did that. And they never arrived. And then she started leaving. And I started following her because I thought, well, what can it hurt? Just to, you know, it's like, gosh. Because I thought, well, the police are going to get here any minute, right?
Yeah.
They're going to get here any minute. Don't get your eyes off of her. They'll be here any minute.
But then she starts to leave. Are you thinking at this point that maybe you'll say something to her or not?
No, I was just, my feeling was, is why aren't the police here? Get here, get here, get here. Please get here. I'm just thinking that if they get here, then we can question her, you know? I just felt like I didn't really want to talk to her. I just, I just wanted the police there so we could straighten it out. But I didn't want to let my eyes off of her. And she didn't quite know right away because the gentleman that she was with went one way and she went through the parking lot and then up the sidewalk. And I kind of followed. I kind of let her get away a little bit and then I couldn't see her anymore. And so I kind of ran around the corner and there she was. She was stopped looking right at me. And I froze and I went, okay, well, the jig is up. She knows you're following her. It's like, okay, what are you going to do? What are you going
to
do?
One other part of the picture I want you to help me with, Karen. Now, are you bigger than her? Is she bigger than you? Is this, I mean, are you thinking at some point if you have to, you know, put your hand on her shoulder that you could somehow do a citizen's arrest? What were you thinking?
She was a big girl. She was a big girl. I mean, I now know through the driver's license that she's 5'10", 150 pounds. At the time, she definitely seemed bigger than me. But then also, in a strange way, I think my adrenaline was going so much so that I felt very calm and I felt, you know, larger than life, almost outside myself. So at the time, she didn't really seem that much bigger than me. But I didn't feel like I wanted to go near her or touch her or... You know, I just wanted the police there. Like, for me, I think the police seemed to be my safety blanket, you know, that then I could approach
but
her.
But she's now on the move. Even if the police show up at the coffee shop, you two are long gone.
Yes, we're, like, down the block. And so, for some reason, I still didn't know quite what to do. I'm like, is this an emergency? Do I call 911? Because I thought, well, maybe, you know, I'll see the police going down the street. I can wave them down. But then there was this man there. We were kind of near this recycling area where a lot of men go and get money for the recycling. And he was kind of noticing this interaction between us. And we were probably about 5 yards away from each other. So we were close, but not that close. And I said, do you know her? And he's like, no, I don't. Do you know her? And I said, well, I think she stole my identity. And he said, and I don't know why he said this, and I would love to ask him, but he said, well, you're not the first person to say that about her. And at that point, I just said, okay, that's it. And I called 911.
This woman has been taking my identity for the last 5 months. It's been a living hell. She just threw something in a trash bag. Now she's continuing to walk.
Have you made a report about this?
Yes. Countless reports. And I think I have her, and I want somebody out here, please. She's not going to get away. I'm not going to let her get away. I'm ready. Somebody better get here because I'm ready to slam her against the cement.
Well, actually, that was, I before I ever ran into her or knew her, you know, in my mind for, you know, months when you're going through this hell of, you know, chasing down this invisible crime, I'm thinking, if I ever see her, I am going. And I knew that she lived here because she would put local addresses on these applications and she was, and the mail kept getting stolen. So I knew she was local. And I thought, ooh, if I ever see her, I just want to smash her face in the cement. That was my feeling.
Okay, but here you are on the phone to 911. You're following her. And then at one point, it looks like she's going to get into a taxi.
She's going to get in a taxi cab. She's going to get in a taxi cab. The taxi number is, it's a yellow cab. She's getting in it.
She got right into the taxi, closed the back door, and it kind of felt like it was in slow motion, but I remember feeling like I calmly walked up to the cab driver and said, you know, please don't drive away. Please don't drive away. This woman, I think, stole my identity. Of course, I've listened to the 911 tapes since, and I was a much more panicked person than I remember.
Much more colorful language than you were recalling.
Yeah.
You I know who you are. I know who you are. Don't let her go. She's identity theft. Don't let her go. The cops are coming. Don't let her go. Don't let her go. Don't let her go. She is a crook. Yes, you are. I am chasing you because you are a crook, and you better wait. If you're not a crook, then wait. No, I'm not going to leave you alone.
And so she opened up the car, got out. And at that point, we were very close. And she said, you're scaring me. Stop following me. And I said to her, I said, well, you know, I'm really scared too. And let's just wait for the police to get here. I have 911 on the phone and we'll figure this out.
So you said, stay here. But what happened next?
She didn't. She turned around and ran down the sidewalk. Ditched the wallet, and I picked it up. It was a Prada wallet, and I said to the 911, oh, look, she can afford Prada wallet. You know how expensive those are? And then she crossed Market Street, which is a pretty busy intersection, and she crossed over, and then she crossed back to a streetcar, and she got on the streetcar, and I managed to get up there to the entrance of the streetcar, and I said to the guide, please don't drive away. You know, that woman, I think, stole my identity. And so he just stood there. He didn't drive away. And I said, I have 911 on the phone. You know, I kept saying, 911, I have 911.
And there's other people on the streetcar at this point watching this?
Oh, yeah. At the time I was thinking, well, you know, they're all like these, you know, big men, and they're all sitting there with their mouths open.
Like, jump that woman and hold her
down.
Yeah,
I'm like, stop her. Why won't, you know, I didn't say that, but I was thinking that, like, why is nobody helping?
This is so much like a bad dream, you know?
Yes, it really was. And she got off at the streetcar at that point and said, you know, I can't stop running. I go, well, I think I said to her, why don't you stop running? Why don't you just wait for the police, you know, please? And she was, I can't, I'm on probation. And so I said that to 911. I said, oh, she says she can't stop because she's on probation. You know, I wonder why. Huh. And she ran across the street again and then ran up the block and then ran up to Franklin Street.
Okay, she just walked in somewhere. We passed Fell coming on to Hayes, and she just walked into another building. 1:20 at Linden. I don't know where she is. Oh, God, I'm so afraid she's going to jump out at me or something.
So you're running along, and you've got your cell phone in one hand. You're talking to 911. I guess you've got this Prada wallet in the other hand.
Yes, and I was carrying two bags. I mean, I had my purse and another bag, and you know, and on the cell phone with the wallet. I think I might even have had my latte because I remember
or some
my
of
hands,
it at that point.
And I just like. Kept thinking, you know, at one point I said to 911, I said, you know, I wish I could open up this wallet to see what was in it because I really just didn't have any time to even stop to look in it. So at one point when I thought I had lost her, the second time I thought I had lost her, because three times I thought I had lost her, I opened it up and unzipped it, and there was all my stuff.
I just looked in the Prada thing and she has my name in there.
Oh my God.
It's freaking hell, man. 24, 2, okay, well, on Hayes, she's at golf. Please get here, please. She just went on call.
There was little cue cards with my name, address, social security number, two bank statements. There were other stolen mail pieces.
I can't believe it.
I was in shock. I was like, I am right. I was right. It is her. It is her. I just remember thinking, oh my gosh, it is her. And I was in hysterics.
Oh my God.
These weren't your credit cards that someone had stolen. This person had fabricated this entire persona in your name, right?
Yes.
That is the one that's been making my life hell for the last 6 months. Can you believe it? I am so proud of myself. Yeah. Like,
it would have been a heck of a lot better if we'd been able to get an officer there a lot quicker. I am so sorry.
I mean,
sometimes it that's just the way it is, but, you know.
I know, because now I don't know where she is.
Yeah.
She got away from me.
And soon after this, Karen, you finally got your policeman, right?
Yes. And then he got out of the car and talked with me. I showed him the wallet. And he actually tried to take it out of my hands, and I was kind of doing a little tug of war because I didn't want him to have it, you know? It's like, no, that's my stuff. And he's like, it's okay.
But the woman in the coat, where was she at this point?
I didn't know. I thought she was gone. And so he talked with me. He goes, well, hold on a second. He goes, just, you know, could you just stay right here? I said, fine. And he walked through the garage. It was a garage of a Walgreens. And there she was, hiding behind this car in this little area. And he saw her and he pulled her out. She was, you know, she was very, she looked like a, you know, a deer in, that got caught in the headlights. You know, she looked pretty scared and pretty, just pretty vulnerable. And I mean, I feel kind of bad, but at that point, I just laughed and I said, you idiot, you should have ran. I just like, I couldn't believe that came out of me, you know? I was just like, oh. So, of course, the police officer, he told me to be quiet, and and I did. And he talked with her for some time. I mean, I don't know, 5 minutes or so. And then he put her in the car, and he put all her stuff on the back of the car. And then he went a little in a little more detail, and we went through the wallet. And he's like, oh, this is your. I said, this is me. I said, yes, this is me. This is me. Yeah. So, and it
was there a moment when, though, all the adrenaline from the chase finally, like you could finally relax because this woman or you know, so it seemed this woman had been caught. There was a chance that your 6 month nightmare was at an end.
I just remember getting these bad cramps in my stomach, and I thought I was going to get sick to my stomach, and my head started to pound. And he's like, are you going to be okay? I'm like, no. I mean, it was, yeah, it was one of the most sick feelings, you know. I think it just, yeah, it just all came, you know.
I'm talking with Karen Lodrick about her experience chasing down the woman who'd stolen her ID. You're listening to The Story from American Public Media. I'm Dick Gordon. Well, once the thief was caught, Karen says the police were very thankful for her help.
They were ecstatic. They couldn't believe it. They said, you mean you have a physical body? And he's like, yes. And a citizen
not only
got
that,
her.
I ran her down myself.
Yeah. And I'm like, I know. And it was me. I did. Little old me. And she had 69 priors, which was
goodness, fraud,
theft, and drugs.
Is she listening to this broadcast from deep inside some prison?
She was released on probation. She was on probation.
Yeah.
And then she was released on more probation.
Like the first probation wasn't working?
Yeah, that's what I said to the judge. I mean, in my statement, I said, please, I said, I don't think probation is helping her. I think there's got to be another solution.
I think, Karen, about what you went through tracking this person who's bleeding away your finances at a time when it doesn't seem like the authorities are really helping you out. And she goes from probation to probation. It makes you wonder, well, gee, why not do the crime if that's the kind of punishment that you get?
Yeah, identity theft is not taken seriously. It's not considered much of a crime. I mean, that's what the lieutenant told me.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm one of the lucky ones because I actually managed to get it stopped. And it's, you know,
But how much money did you lose when everything's all added up, though, Karen?
It was probably close to $22,000 that I recovered.
That you recovered?
There's a $1,600 credit card that they're still investigating for some reason. And but, you know, that doesn't even count the numerous hours that it took for me to handle all this and take care of this. And I'm still to this day taking care of and handling.
Yeah, and you're self-employed, right? So your time is money.
It is. My time is money. And I had, you know, and this is a good year. I mean, or would have been a good year for me. I mean, I had several new clients want to work with me. And there were the extra, I mean, I could have made, you know, tens of thousands of more dollars just in the last 6 months that I, you know, that I had to decline because my spare time was spent dealing with this identity theft.
So I have one other question. I read somewhere that a policeman or a lieutenant or somewhere along the line said that he was so impressed by your work on this that he wanted to hire you to be a policewoman or something?
Yes, that was the lieutenant, Fairbairn, who put the case together.
Was he joking or was he serious?
He was serious. You know, it's funny. I was because he was saying that to me, and I was like, you know, I just want to know, was there an award, a reward? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Is there a reward for her being wanted in Yolo County? What is that? And he goes, you know what? I have a reward for you. I'm like, oh, great. You know, so he goes, come with me. And he took me down through these hallways and the elevator and down another hallway and then took me to the recruitment office. And he said, give this woman a job. So I thought that was kind of funny. But, I don't think I have the stomach for it.
Karen Laudrick says one thing she has done is make some significant changes in the way that she manages her money and her papers. I'll talk with her about that in just a moment. I'm Dick Gordon from American Public Media. This is The Story.
30 J's in jail, with my back turned to the wall. Another gal in my stall. Don't mind being in jail, but I got to stay there so long, so long. Don't mind being in jail, but I gotta stay there so long, so long.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story. Karen Laudrick went through the same frustration that millions of other Americans have endured when their identity is stolen. And it's a crime that's not going away. One agency estimates that there were 8.5 million people in the U.S. who became victims of this crime last year alone. And that's just an estimate. Karen says she's taken the time to figure out what she should be doing now to protect herself from ever having this happen again.
I keep track of my account much more diligently. I mean, every day. I try every day to look at it because you can remember your transactions within the day. So I look at that. I'm no longer with Wells Fargo. I'm with a new bank, Citibank, which they don't do the paper trails like Wells Fargo does. I mean, I'm still receiving more paper and more mail from Wells Fargo, and I'm no longer their customer than I do for my own bank, which I think is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I would try to, eliminate that, like the paper trails.
Places that you don't shop or ways that you don't shop? You know, the little sort of flash your card in front of the little button. Are there things that you do or you don't do as a result of being burned once?
I don't put my Social Security number on anything, even if they request it. I don't do it.
Right.
And I tell them I'm not going to do it. I don't use your debit card. Use a credit card, and then just pay it at the end of the month, because debit cards go directly into your account. And if they get that number, that's it. They can deplete that account very quickly.
Are you a different person after going through all this? Are you more suspicious or meaner or what?
I'm definitely more suspicious. I definitely look at things more cautiously and giving out my information more cautiously. I realized that, I have an inner strength that, I knew I had, but I just never utilized it to the extent that I did on that day. And so I want to keep using that strength in my life. And I want to also, I've always been the type of person that always wanted to help people. And I feel like maybe this is, in a sense, of maybe a calling to help people with identity theft. And, just help victims and try to get laws changed, try to get more protection for us, so that's how I've changed definitely, is that I'm becoming an advocate for this crime, and I'm, I'm not going to keep, they can't keep me quiet, about it, because it needs to change.
What would you do, Karen, if you saw the woman with the coat on the street?
If I saw her today?
Mm.
I don't know. You know, I'm scared to death of her now. It's so funny. I couldn't even look at her in the courtroom, and I.
Well, you chased her over half of San Francisco.
I know. It's so. It's like so surreal to me. Like I did that. Wow. I can't believe I did that because now I'm a little scared of her. I don't know if I would. I think if I felt in a safe environment, like on the street, probably not. I probably wouldn't. But if I was in a safe environment, I would like to. You know, ask if, you know, what can you do? Get your life better. Let's make your life better. You know, why are you living like this? I mean, I know that seems weird, but I want to change her, I guess. I want to make her a better citizen for herself and for the rest of, you know, society, because, I mean, I don't want her to do this to somebody else when she gets out.
Well, Karen, I can almost guarantee you that if you're a little bit edgy of her, she's probably scared stiff of you.
Yeah, she better be. No.
This is an amazing story. I want to thank you for taking time out of your day to tell it to us.
Okay, thank you, Dick.
Karen Lodrick has put together a website and a blog where she talks about her experience with ID theft. We have a link to that on our own website at thestory.org. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Story. By now, you know as well as I do how one story can lead to another. Some time back, I started talking with people who've had these accidental brushes with celebrity. And what makes these stories so fascinating is that in many cases, what happens is not what you expect. Here's another story. This one comes from Karen Brandt in Chicago. Back in the early 60s, Karen was a flight attendant on the TWA run between Las Vegas and New York. The plane made one stop in Chicago. Now, because Karen flew this route regularly, she was used to dealing with celebrities. But late, late one night, Karen was warned that Judy Garland would be boarding in Vegas. Judy Garland was flying to New York with her hairdresser. As it turned out, the two would have the whole first-class cabin to themselves, and Karen was to be their attendant. Before they boarded, though, Karen was given some very clear instructions.
Do not speak to her. Capital letters.
Seriously?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Do not speak to her.
But I mean, you'd have a little bit of business as a flight attendant, you know, do up your seatbelt. Can I get you a glass of water?
Exactly.
This sort of stuff. You were going to be allowed to do that, though, weren't you, Karen?
Yeah. So you're going to be allowed to do your job, but you certainly weren't allowed to speak to her. And I was flying cabin, so I had to talk to her. You know, there was no alternative.
So tell me what happened. Did she come on with a big flourish, or how did that happen?
No. As a matter of fact, she didn't. She came on. She's a small woman. I'm not very tall. I'm about five and a half. Of course, I was wearing big girl shoes, but I'm not a tall woman. And she is very small and delicate looking. And she came on, well, very quietly. Her hairdresser was more self-important, frankly, and reminded me that I could not talk to her. And they sat down. In a way, it was sort of alarming because they got on with a shopping bag, which I realized was full of white wine bottles.
Ooh.
And after we got airborne, he asked for it. She didn't ask for anything at that point. He asked for a water glass filled with ice, and I should just keep the ice filled. And so I brought that. And they uncorked the bottles or a bottle, and she filled up the water glass.
Was she drinking a lot of wine?
Well, she drank through the whole flight, yeah.
Wow.
So I brought the glass, you know, brought the ice, kept the ice coming, and then, you know, the meals got heated, and it was time to ask them if they wanted to eat, and she shook her head and said no, and so fine, you go away, you know. Do not talk to her. And more ice, come back with the coffee pot. And by about the third time I came back with the coffee pot, I was feeling sad for her. I don't know how else to say how I felt. I felt sad for her. And I really wanted her to eat, you know. And I guess I must have been indicating that by the tone of my voice. And said to her, you know, are you really sure you wouldn't like some breakfast? And she looked at me directly at that point because she hadn't been really looking at me or talking to me. But she looked at me directly at that point and she said, you really do want me to eat breakfast, don't you? And I said, yes, I really do want you to eat breakfast. And she said, okay, bring it. I said, oh, good. And then I got lighthearted. You know, I thought, yeah, I'm going to save Judy Garland. And I brought her breakfast. I brought the tray and put it down in front of her. And I thought, oh, good. You know, so I went away and, you know, came back a little while later and said, would you like some coffee? And, of course, she hadn't eaten.
She hadn't touched her breakfast.
She hadn't touched her breakfast. No, not at all. So now I'm feeling downhearted again, you know. And I said, are you sure you wouldn't like to eat it? It's really very good, you know, or some silly thing. You know, I was a very young girl, you know, and I wanted her to eat. I really wanted her to eat. And she just smiled at me. And we got into Chicago. We were getting ready to come into Chicago. So, of course, you have to take the trays, you know, back and down the hatches, et cetera. But at that point, she was, you know, she was looking at me. You know, I was a person at that point, you know. And when we landed, back then, when you landed, there was a ground crew that got on and actually cleaned the airplane. Wonder of wonders, they actually cleaned the airplane.
You're making me nostalgic.
I know. It makes me nostalgic to talk about it. So the ground crew got on, and there were a lot of men, actually, because at that hour of the night, and back then, it was men that did that job. And
this hour of the night, we're talking like 3 in the morning, right? I mean,
yes,
you left
yes.
Las Vegas at midnight.
Yes.
Okay.
So she got up and she said to me, I want to change my clothes. She was dressed and she wanted to get undressed. And she said to me, I want to put on this bathrobe. So I said, okay, I'll go and try to, you know, route the ground crew out of the washroom. And I couldn't get them moving fast enough. And she wanted to change right then. So I said, well, you know, I'll do the best thing. She said, no. You just stand here in the aisle and stand in front of me, and I'll change my clothes here. You just stand in front of me. It'll be okay. And I said, no. I can't do that. Wait, I'll get them out of there, you know. And she's like, no, you don't have to. I'm going to change right here. It'll be okay. You won't see anything. And now we were interacting like two girls that were sort of giggling, you know. So now I'm beginning to giggle, and I'm saying, no, you can't. She said, yes, I will bet you that I can change right in front of you. You are 2 inches away from me. I will change right in front of you, and you won't see anything, not any skin. I said, you can't do that. And she said, I grew up in a chunk. I was born backstage in a theater. I can do it. I bet you. So now we were buds.
I was going to say, you bonded.
Thing.
Yeah.
We bonded. Dude, I said, okay, but I don't think you're going to be able to do it. You know, I'm looking over my shoulder and looking over her shoulder, you know, people behind her, because again, it's station stop and it's ground crew and they're walking through, you know. So she put this caftan on. It had a long zipper in the front. She put it on, but she didn't put her arms in the sleeves. Well, duh. You know, it didn't ever occur to me. I'd never seen anybody do that.
So it's like she's draped a small tent over herself.
Yes.
And she's just changing underneath it.
How clever. Yeah. How clever.
It's probably done a dozen times on movie sets with hundreds of people around, right?
Totally. So she puts this thing on and she starts taking off her clothes. And of course, you get it the minute you see it.
Yeah.
You know, oh, I've lost this bet, you know.
What's happening to the hairdresser at this point? Because
he was
supposed to be guarding her, right?
He was putting pins in my doll.
Oh, shooting daggers at you, was he?
Oh, yeah. He was not a happy camper. And I don't think, other than to get on the airplane to tell me, do not talk to her, I don't think he ever said another word. Or let me say, my world had narrowed.
And closed him out.
I was in love, you know. I mean, I couldn't have focused on anybody else. It was a good thing there was no one else in first class because I couldn't have focused on them anyway.
Okay, so tell me, though. I mean, I've always had a crush on Judy Garland. I find her gorgeous. I love the way that she presents herself. Are you telling me that this moment in the first class cabin of this TWA flight, you were actually experiencing that charm one-on-one yourself?
Yes, absolutely. She was everything that you see on the stage except just one person to one person.
Wow.
I don't know if I'm expressing that very well. She was just somebody you wanted to be friends with.
Karen Brandt was a flight attendant in the early 60s when she met Judy Garland on a flight from Vegas to New York. You're listening to The Story from American Public Media. I'm Dick Gordon. Well, after the plane had been cleaned, it was near dawn. and time to take off for New York.
She said to me, you know, will you sit with me for takeoff? Can you sit with me for takeoff? And I said, sure, you know, because we're taxiing out. So she got up, climbed over the hairdresser. He didn't make her climb over, but she got up, and we moved across the aisle, and she sat at the window seat, and I sat in the aisle seat. And now the sun is coming up. And, okay, this was like, oh, my God. She held my hand. She held my hand, like, between her two hands, and she's looking out the window, and she's in this bathrobe, and no, you know, no Judy Garland glamour thing going on. And we're taking off, and she looks at me, and she said, you are so lucky. And I was like, I am, you know.
You're Judy Garland, and I'm lucky.
Yeah, right, exactly. So I said, I am. And she said, you get to see this all the time. How fortunate you are.
Oh, she's talking about the sunrise.
Yes. Yes. She's talking. She said, look how beautiful it is. The sun is coming up and you could see the lake, you know, and all that. And she was telling me how fortunate I was to be able to do that a lot. I mean, I couldn't say anything to that except agree with her, of course. That was true, you know. But it was quite a moment. Quite a moment.
Was she right? When you think about it, I mean, here's this woman who we know now had such a tough life, being basically knocked around by everyone who wanted a little piece of her. And here she is, all by herself with you on an airplane. And she says, you're lucky.
Yeah.
Was she right?
Exactly. Yes, I think so. Especially as I got older through the years, one thinks about these things. And I wondered if there wasn't some longing in her to be just a person on an airplane enjoying a sunrise. And I saw me as being the fortunate one too, to be quite honest, even though I was young and not very experienced.
Well, think about it though, Karen. She's the one who needed a water glass full of wine to make it through an airplane flight at that point.
Totally.
What happened at the end of the flight?
She went back and sat with the hairdresser. And
the evil hairdresser.
The evil hairdresser. Yeah, that's how I remember him too, poor guy. But he began doing her hair, and then she did need to change again into clothes and put makeup on and all that kind of stuff. And gradually started becoming Judy Garland, you know.
But so this becoming Judy Garland again, this was like putting on the armor, squaring the shoulders. Here I go back to my land of flashbulbs and adoring fans?
Quite literally, quite literally. And when we landed, as the jetway is put in place, the person on the jetway bangs, you know, a couple of times on the door to let you know that it's time to open it. And I started to open the door, and she said, wait a minute. And so I did, and she said, how do I look?
And she asked you.
Yeah.
Nice.
How do I look? And she was adjusting the fur coat on her shoulders, you know, and she seemed to grow, like, taller and bigger. And I said, you look beautiful. And she said, give me a minute. And I did. And she said, okay, I'm ready for him. Open the door. And I said, okay. And I opened the door, and she thanked me and said goodbye. And I got weepy and wanted to chase her, I have to admit. And, you know, she stepped off that airplane, and she was walking on a stage.
Chasing rainbows, watching clouds drifting by. My schemes are just like all my dreams ending in the sky.
Karen Brandt contacted us with her Judy Garland story. And many of these kinds of stories actually come directly from listeners like you. Just write to me at thestory.org. Or you can leave me a message on our telephone line at 1-888-966-9862. Just a couple of words. We'll take care of the rest. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story.
Even make a game, believe me, I'm always chasing rainbows, waiting to find a little bluebird in vain. Some fellas make a winning sometime. I never even make a game. Believe me, I'm always chasing rain.
The Story is a production of North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
American Public Media.